the Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic today. The conversation that the listeners are about to embark upon is a bit of an adventure, but after it's all said and done, I think everyone's going to come out a better person because of it. That might be a little bit hyperbolic, but I stand by my words, and I also stand by my need to know how you're doing, Tim.
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot for asking. I appreciate it. Lance, this episode is a lot of fun. We speak with our weird friend Scott. He's been on the show recently. We covered some weird topics, some weird news stories with him only a few weeks ago, and he's back for more. This is just a lot of fun to discuss these odd, offbeat news stories, but also with him just makes it extra interesting to me.
And as a matter of fact, we have begun to unpack this new issue that he seems to have with fine art. We touched on it in the first episode we did with him, and it's really blossomed into a much bigger problem. I think that this needs to be like its own segment, or we just leave it alone forever, because it sort of escalated. Even if it's shtick that he's doing, it's so irritating to me.
Yeah, it's a circular conversation. It definitely irritates me too, but I almost love it. Like, I'm almost playing the shtick back at him, if you will. But it's also a real reaction. Like, it's frustrating to hear him describe fine art that way.
And the thing about Scott is when you're done rolling and you say to him, that was good, that's just an act, right? He'll never tell you the truth. So you really don't know if it's an act or if it's the truth or if life is just an act for him.
Yeah, all of the above. So we cover several weird news stories this week. We speak about an emotional support alligator, a Van Gogh hidden self-portrait that is very interesting. But my favorite story is the town that lost the time capsule, and it's just a classic.
And Tim, people are listening to this episode, and periodically ads are going to pop up because we have an obligation to pay our bills. If people don't want to listen to these ads, I don't know why they wouldn't, because there's some useful stuff out there. If they don't want to listen to them, where can they go? They need an alternative.
You know what, Lance? You're right, and we have a wonderful alternative to offer. If they go to crawlspace.supportingcast.fm, they can sign up for the price of a cup of coffee per month, and they'll get every single episode of Crawl Space ad-free, as well as our weekly bonus show.
And in addition to the ad-free episodes and the Crawl Space Crypt, we're also going to give them an Ask Us Anything, and that's coming up just around the corner.
That's right. Yeah, Monday, September 12th at 3 p.m. Eastern, and we're going to have an Ask Us Anything with our premium subscribers, so don't waste any time. Sign up now at crawlspace.supportingcast.fm, and you can get a free month if you use promo code CRAWLSPACE. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening. Follow us on social media at CrawlSpace Podcast or CrawlSpace Pod.
If anybody has any constructive criticisms or compliments for our weird friend Scott, he invites you to send him a letter via the United States Postal Service.
But he'll never give you his address.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
How's it going, everyone? It's Tim and Lance here. Have you ever wanted someone to read you creepy bedtime stories in the most velvety voice ever?
Well, you had me hooked at velvety, Tim. We are excited to share a podcast that is exactly that. It's called Nighty Night Bedtime Stories to Keep You Awake. And Tim, it's narrated by a friend of ours.
That's right. New York Times bestselling author and podcaster Rabia Chaudhry. Nighty Night is an anthology featuring classic horror stories this season and fictionalized true life stories in season one that are so creepy that you will realize reality is scarier than fiction.
And Tim, I know our favorite part of each episode is at the end when Rabia says, but wait, there's more to the story. And we get to hear those fascinating details about the author and the context of the tale. What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode is The Tiny Hares from season one, which takes us on a harrowing journey when the narrator runs into a dangerous man in the woods. What about you?
Well, mine comes from the current season. It's called The Horla, in which we witness the protagonist spiral into a descent of madness. Tim, I feel like I'm constantly spiraling into a descent of madness, so I really relate to that one.
Well, I hear that. So dim your lights, get under a cozy blanket, and find and subscribe to Nighty Night wherever you get your podcasts.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. What's up, Lance?
It's a good day, you know? Feeling excellent today. What a way to wrap up the week. This is a Friday that we're recording this, September 2nd. And not only are we joined with our weird friend Scott, but he seems to have brought, well, no sleeves to the conversation, I just noticed. Showing off the substantial guns there. But you also brought some friends with you.
They call them more pencils instead of guns, that type of lead. Yeah, and I have a crew with me here. Brian Austin Green, Shannon Doherty, Luke Perry, Jenny Garth, Ian Zuring, Gabriel Carteras, Tori Spelling, and Jason Priestley decided to join me.
I love that you went with their real names and not their character names.
And rest in peace, Luke Perry. We do miss you. We miss you very much. And thank you for your contribution to, you know, my high school years, really, you know, helped me. I wasn't the cool guy, though, like Luke, like Dylan was, though. So I couldn't relate too much to his character, but I was more kind of, I actually wasn't like any of the characters, to be honest. I don't know why I was so into the show. I couldn't relate to any of them.
I feel like you're a bit of a Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve was kind of a goofball, but I was smarter than Steve. Steve was more of a jock.
Steve was super lame. That's why I was comparing you to him.
Steve was, he was the party guy. He was the guy, you know, wanting to get the party going. And but he'd get into trouble a lot. He'd do something stupid a lot, get into trouble.
He's got a bit of a psychotic look going on there.
Yeah. I'd actually say maybe I was more kind of like the mom, like Carol Potter, her real name was.
You do have a Carol Potter vibe to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen, like, now that I look back, she was actually pretty attractive woman.
Okay.
I didn't think of it back then.
All
sorry.
Right, all right, okay. All right. So if you're wondering what the heck is happening here, we are talking about some weird stories here today with our weird friend Scott. This is now, I think, the fifth entry into our Weird Space or Keep America Weird series here. And Scotty's back for more weird stories. So welcome back, Scott.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me back. And yeah, I really enjoyed Weird Space Part 3, which was the last episode I was on. And, you know, I felt like I had some good jokes in that. You know, I was just reviewing the episode, and I really feel like after this episode, hopefully we could just make a highlight reel of my kind of my jokes with the, you know, we'll see how today goes. Maybe I might be jumping on this a little too soon, but I feel like that's what the audience would want. Maybe like a little, you know, weird Scott highlight reel of jokes.
I don't know why I'm always so amused, and I forget every time we start one of these episodes how amusing it is to watch you look at your screens. And every time we start, I'm always looking at you and I'm like, how many screens does he have, or is it one giant screen?
It's multiple.
Multiple screens, okay.
Yeah, five. I have five different screens.
And one of them's super bright.
Well, yeah. Well, they're different shades, you know. Five shades of brightness on the different monitors. It's complex. We don't have to get into it now, but if you want to.
No, it's fine.
Okay. I'm actually wondering about that flag that's on your microphone. Is that a Swedish flag?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm a little bit Swedish. I have some Swedish in me, yes.
I got that in a restaurant. There was a Swedish meatball appetizer, so we ordered it, and they served it with a little Swedish flag toothpick. I was like, oh, that's perfect.
Oh. Very nice. Now, are you 100%?
No.
Were you born in Sweden?
Yes.
Okay. Let's start talking about some weird stories. The first story comes from Philadelphia, and it's from the Huffington Post, and the headline is, "Watch a girl walk an emotional support alligator on a leash in a Philly park." This is a pretty weird one.
Yeah, I don't think we need to go down the road of whether or not this is weird and define weird. This is weird, and my first thought is no. No, it's an alligator.
Yeah, well, he's got a name. He's got a friendly name, Wally, mm-hmm. and he's apparently 7 years old, and he's a TikTok star.
Great. Great.
And he reportedly loves to give hugs.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, after he's well-fed. But if he's not well-fed, then...
Scott, what's your feelings on this? I understand emotional support animals. I do. Cats, dogs. I draw the line at, like, alligators, though. Maybe a little bit before an alligator, but this is just asking for trouble.
Right. And you guys know, I'm sure, I'm not sure if most of the audience knows, I am pretty hardcore animal rights person. And so obviously I'm all about the person who I think is a child and they may have be going under cancer treatment and stuff. So I'm all about supporting them having an emotional support animal, you know, a buddy, but I feel like an alligator is a wild animal. And what is the most appalling thing about this story to me is the fact that Pennsylvania allows alligators as pets. That needs to be changed right there. That's ridiculous. Alligators are wild animals. There's plenty of other animals that need homes as pets, dogs, cats, and so forth. Who made that law? Who said, yep, alligators need, you know, let's allow this, that they could be pets. That's what really bugs me about this story.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't really understand how that is okay. I guess I need to see a map of the country and see where it's legal to have an alligator as a pet. You'd think it's only like southern states, you know, and this seems like a story that's straight out of Florida, but it's not. It's Pennsylvania. I feel like in Florida, the people know not to mess with the alligators for the most part.
I mean, a dog can turn on you. A well-trained dog can turn on you. This is an alligator that is a predator. This is a carnivore.
Well, come on, not Wally.
It probably has a PSI of like 4,000 pounds per square inch. Like this, I get it. Like it's a novel thing and the alligator is now a TikTok star. And I'm not taking anything away from the cancer treatment that the individual is going through and raising money for that and using the alligator, but come on. I mean, this is going to turn into something where the alligator turns, and now it's like, I can't believe this alligator did this. It's like the story of the woman who owned the monkey and was feeding, had dinner with her monkey, a glass of wine, and then all of a sudden the monkey decided it was going to eat her face. And that happened.
But Lance, this alligator wears sunglasses and sombreros.
Oh, I'm sure it loves wearing sunglasses and sombreros.
Yeah, it does. It has. I have to say, it seems like a small alligator for a fully grown gator at 7 years old. It doesn't seem bigger than like a 30-pound dog or something like that.
No, you're right. It does seem small.
Obviously, this alligator probably can't go back into the wild at this point. I don't know what the circumstances were, how it originally got to the rescue or rehabilitation facility, but that's where it should be. Given an environment to be in with its buddies that it could, you know, try to resemble the wild as much as possible. It doesn't need to be out encountering people and, you know, doing non-alligator things. And, you know, please get this person, you know, a hamster or, well, hamster's debatable too.
A hamster's not going to be a TikTok star.
Dogs right. and cats, plenty of dogs and cats that need homes that would enjoy it more than the alligator. You know, there's a lot of outgoing social dogs that would love this.
How do you know what the gator likes or doesn't like?
Have you seen the movie? What was the movie with, wasn't it Ice Cube? Was the one with the alligator in it? Did you guys see that one? It was like a giant croc. Was it Ice Cube in that movie or Ice-T?
You're talking about Lake Placid or what are you talking
about? No, it was like with the big croc. Maybe even Halle Berry was in it. I don't know. But that just warns you. That just shows you what can possibly happen. What if they accidentally take it to a nuclear power plant? Then next thing you know, we have Godzilla on our hands.
Well, I'll say, to answer your question, Tim, how do we know that it doesn't like this? I think through thousands of years of evolution. I mean, alligators are not known to wander up to people and just you know, enter into their home in a peaceful situation and curl up next to them in bed. And now they're, you know, alligators are supposed to be in the wild. If this was a rescue alligator, it needs to be in the right environment. And we are very arrogant as human beings to think that this alligator wants anything other than to be in the wild.
Your evolution point is completely overrun by one Google of of Wally the Alligator's TikTok page. There's oodles of evidence showing this alligator having a blast. And so this person, I think it's Joey Henney or Heaney, is undergoing cancer treatment. And I think it's the older fellow who rescued Wally, or I guess started this Walligator and Friends Reptile Rescue. So yeah, it is a little bit like the TikTok page is definitely a bit of, you know, trying to raise awareness and help fund this fellow's cancer treatment, which is a good thing to have happen, I suppose. It's kind of a weird way to go about it, but.
Well, they'll also be eligible to receive $10,000 for the online competition, America's Favorite Pet, Animal Kingdom.
Yep, they're currently in first, I believe. And I feel like Wally's got a good chance to win this one. How? But what emotional support is this providing? I guess it doesn't matter what kind of animal is providing the support. I guess the reptile, the alligator, is providing support for this Joey guy.
Hey, you know what? I got it confused. The movie that Ice Cube was in was Anaconda.
Also, not to have as a emotional support reptile. Well, I don't believe that this is a weird story anymore. This is just a frustrating story. Aggravating.
Yeah. It is weird, though, having an alligator as an emotional support. You know, it is weird.
It loves walking through Philadelphia parks in the summer. That's for sure.
It's hunting.
I can't remember Lake Placid now. I'm trying to remember that. I don't know.
It's with Betty White and Bill Pullman, I think, right?
Do they have a
Oliver
is there
Platt?
A love, is there a love scene between them?
Bridget Fonda is in that one. I don't think there's any love scenes in that one. That movie is like 80 minutes long. It's like perfectly fast. It's great, actually.
Was it better than Anaconda?
Much better than Anaconda. It's a comedy, really.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just want this to be more of a public service announcement. I don't want it to be in hindsight, because someone's getting seriously injured by this alligator. Then they're going to have to like put it down. Then they're going to say, well, it loved getting hugs till the day it doesn't.
Just keep feeding it. It's not going to bite anybody.
Just keep throwing meat at it.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
And a thank you to our sponsors. Back to the program.
And so the next story brings us to Memphis, Tennessee. Truck hits retaining wall, spills Alfredo sauce across Tennessee highway. This one's from UPI.com from August 31st. So apparently a truck hit a retaining wall and several lanes of Interstate 55 near Macklemore Ave had to be closed and cleaned up because of the Alfredo sauce all over the highway.
Well, I guess they need to rename Macklemore Ave to Macklemore Ave.
That was the joke that you had.
That was the, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought it was going to be a like clean up on aisle 5 type joke.
No, it's Alfredo sauce, you know, so now it's Macklemore Ave.
I understood, yeah.
Macklemore.
Because it's Italian.
It's Italian.
Right, yeah.
You think everyone gets that in the audience?
Yeah, there go all of our Italian listeners, our Italian-American and Native Italian listeners. Well, I was disappointed with this. The headline's great. You picture this tanker. This is what I was picturing anyway. This tanker getting into this like comedic accident. No one's injured. And you have the big silver cylinder trailer on it. And it like springs a leak and it's just pouring this Alfredo sauce out. But it turns out these were bottles, like glass jars. Yeah. So now it's all mixed up with glass and it's a big mess. And I was trying to come up with a joke about people like coming in with baguettes and like focaccia bread and like sopping it up. But I mean, there's glass in it. You can't really make much light of that.
I hate glass. If it was up to me, I boycotted glass in my house.
Why?
Well, because it's not, you step on it, it gets in your foot. That's always a problem. You slice your finger with it.
So you're cutting your foot and your finger on jars of glass?
Yeah. I feel like there's better alternatives to glass. You can use tin, you know, you can use ceramics
and plastic. Yeah.
Plastic, you know, there is an environmental
styrofoam
component to play. Not as environmentally friendly there.
Diamond. Do you have a lot of like shards of glass just laying around?
Well, it's easily, you can drop them. I've broken some in my sink plenty of times, and it's tough to get all those shards of glass out without, you know, getting it in your finger. And then what if there's a natural disaster? Then we have glass everywhere. I actually thought of a good idea for a movie.
Elevator pitch.
Okay. You're like one of the last people in the world, dystopia, and all the food you need to survive, you have to walk across like 100 yards of glass to get to it. It was along those lines. It has potential. Yeah, like a world of glass shards.
All right.
Yeah.
But to get to what you need to survive. McLemore!
How long do you think it took to clean this up? And who
had to
clean it
up? Still cleaning it up.
Yeah, is this like the town workers, like highway workers have to clean this up?
Clean up on Interstate 55.
And how costly?
Yeah, who's paying for this? The taxpayers? Probably.
Oh, yeah. No, you're hitting on multiple questions here. So this happened on August 31st. So they're definitely still cleaning it up because it hasn't even been a full 2 days since this happened. Well, the article is August 31st. So I'm assuming it was close around that time. It doesn't state who's cleaning it up. So it was on a state highway. So it must be like Department of Public Works, I would imagine, or something along those lines. Your tax dollars, right?
Or maybe some people from the local grocery stores were used to cleaning up the broken.
Oh, there's a good joke. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know why they would, but now I did notice a contradiction in the reporting on this story from UPI.com. The video that links in this article, which is from like a local news outlet in Memphis, it says that the jars of Alfredo sauce are five brothers. But in the reporting, in the article, it says that they're Bertolli Alfredo sauce. So I went on a Googling mission to try to find out which brand this was once and for all. I think I've got an answer.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hit us.
I think it's Bertolli because the label is red. And if you watch the video, there's some red labels. And it doesn't seem like that's the same label for five brothers. So I don't know how the reporting got messed up here.
What's the significance? I don't know.
Do you think like the driver got called into his or her boss's office the next day and they're like, you know why we're calling you in here?
I guess it depends what caused the crash. Does it say what caused the crash?
Was it says the truck hit a retaining wall.
Well, someone must have been, maybe. I don't want to assume anything, but you know, was he nodding off possibly, or you know, then he's in big trouble.
I have to imagine this is the driver's fault, I think.
Well, it said one person was categorized with minor injuries, so I wonder if that was the driver.
Yeah, probably.
Glad no one got hurt.
Could have like overcorrected, you know, a little drowsy. But now you got me distracted here with the Bertolli bottle and the Five Brothers bottle or jar.
This isn't that weird of a story.
It isn't.
I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to move on whenever you guys are.
Yeah, this kind of thing happens somewhat frequently. There was actually another story where marinara sauce was spilt on a highway in a different location this week. So, yeah.
What's next? Vodka sauce.
Yeah, I mean, also just like wondering how much this cost the company. Like, it must have cost them like tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, they could afford it.
Yeah, there's probably some like contingency or some sort of like line item in their annual budget that's for accidents and things of this nature. But
insurance.
Yeah, I feel like you hear like these stories once in a while, and it's the, you know, sort of fun, you know, no real victim stories, like a bunch of molasses or ketchup or Alfredo sauce. Do you guys even eat Alfredo sauce, pasta with Alfredo sauce?
How do they even preserve that? There's dairy in it. They have to preserve it at room temperature. Seems, I wouldn't mind having homemade Alfredo sauce where it's fresh, but what do they put in that to preserve the dairy?
Like, you guys have never gone out to a restaurant and got that chicken Alfredo with broccoli?
Way back in the day.
Yeah, I've never ordered it. I mean, I've definitely had it, but I wouldn't choose to order it probably. I have other preferences, I think.
Yeah, more of a red sauce person here. Actually, pink
more
sauce.
Of a vodka
is really
sauce.
Good. Oh, that has dairy in it too, I think, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Hmm.
So you must not be lactose intolerant.
No, but there was a time in my life where I thought I was. I think everyone is kind of lactose intolerant.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Those are the days.
I think I've only had that chicken pasta Alfredo once. It was at, because someone was insisting I try it. It was homemade. It was in like a crock pot or something. So I tried it. It's at a party. Oof. Sits heavy.
Is that restaurant Bertucci still in New England, or are they out of business yet?
Got one down the street from me.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. Good for them.
You don't have Bertucci's out there?
No. Frankly, I don't even know how, they're not even that good really, right? Isn't it just like fast food Italian almost in a restaurant setting?
Yeah, and they got pizza. Yeah. And you know, it's easy for families, I think.
I'd rather go to Olive Garden if I had the choice.
It's just like a chain, which is exactly the same thing, basically, where it's like just a national version of something that's like kind of ethnic.
Would you go to Olive Garden over Bertucci's?
They're both the exact same thing to me.
Pretty much, right?
So if you guys get them as a sponsor, I want a cut of that now for just bringing them up. Cut me in on that, 10%.
Five.
Actually, Bertucci's paid me to mention them already, so I already got a little bit. They're struggling. They need a little help.
All right, next story comes from Sky News. It's called Old Manuscripts Which Reveal Bizarre Medieval Medical Cures Being Shared by Cambridge University. And this is just a really interesting story. And apparently these old manuscripts are being shared publicly, and they include really wild remedies for common medical issues.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the weird part is what they did to treat people back in the day. I think that's the weirdest part of it.
That's what we're getting at.
Well, I don't know if the story, is the story weird that they discover the manuscript? Is that?
No, like, it's not a newly discovered manuscript. They're newly sharing it. Yeah, so baking a salted owl and grinding it into powder to treat gout is one of these suggestions. My question on that one is like how is someone with severe gout expected to catch an owl?
And why an owl?
How is anyone expected to catch an owl?
Right, and why would you pick an owl? Why not?
Well, you could use a puppy instead, stuffing a puppy with snail and sage. Roasting it over a fire and using the fat to make a salve is another suggested gout cure, according to this article.
Did you just say a puppy? Like a
dog
puppy.
I'm assuming a dog puppy, not like a sea lion pup. But first of all, I think any story coming from Sky News is going to be fantastic. That's just my personal observation.
Sky News is pretty legit. It's an outlet out of the UK.
I just want to get back to the gout thing real quick. I don't know how long gout has been like identifiable. So how did that become gout? Back then, Were they calling it gout, I wonder?
Probably not.
Without a gout.
Oh,
oh boy. Yeah, it seems like gout is a common form of inflammatory arthritis. So, I mean, there's a lot of different kind of arthritises. So I think this is just one kind. So I would say it's some kind of inflammation that was happening. I would say they probably tried this with every kind of inflammation on the body.
Yeah. Have you ever met anybody with gout?
I don't know. I don't think so.
You'd know. They would tell you every single opportunity that they had the gout. I met two people in my life with gout. It might be hereditary, but most of the time it's because of a poor diet or basically that's it. Poor diet, poor exercise, and things tend to build up. And then once they get it, they can't walk. And I apologize if I'm offending anybody with gout, but they can't walk. They can't like move. And they're always like, the gout. It's really annoying.
No gout. No gout.
Yeah, I don't know. Arthritis can be brought on in for a lot of different reasons. I have an arthritic condition. It's not gout, but I'm on pills for it. And untreated, I would be in a lot of pain.
They did a lot of weird stuff to treat medical things back in the day. All of it's weird.
Back then it wasn't weird.
Right, just like now, 100 years from now, we're going to be looking back at what they're doing to us now and say, hey, that was pretty weird.
I don't think so. Specifically, I need specifics here because there's been some really significant achievements and advancements in medicine.
I think they're going to go more towards non-invasive surgeries. Like they'll be able to do things on your insides without actually cutting you open and things like that possibly.
I see. Yes. Good point. Like things like colonoscopies, things like mammograms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like those things are, I'm blown away at how antiquated they still seem.
So there's still a lot of things like that.
Yep. All right. And you know what's really fascinating and kind of fun is that the old leech thing, that is still one of the most like useful, effective methods out there. Like they discovered the whole leech treatment, and really, I think some places still use it.
Yeah. I think we need to go back to those type of traditional treatments.
You're such a contradiction.
Well, not the ones where they like solder, you know, if you have a cataracts and they put hot irons on your eyes. I'm talking more like I'm just using more traditional herbal treatments and things.
But people still use that. People still do the, what do you call it, homeopathic? People still do that all the time.
Right. I think we need to focus on things like that and not these weird kind of treatments that could be considered barbaric in a way.
Such as?
Back in the, you know, hundreds of years ago, they would put hot irons on your eyes if you had cataracts or something. Happened to St. Francis.
But now they don't do that.
Right, but there's still things like that. But if we go to more herbal...
Example?
I guess that's...
How many times are you going to ask? All right, here's one. Endoscopy.
Yeah, colonoscopies, dental treatments, you know, pulling, like yanking your tooth out.
Well, hold on, you can't just be like blanket statement yanking your tooth out. You're not just sitting down in the dentist chair. They're giving you the Novocaine. They're giving you whatever it takes so you don't feel the pain. They're taking the tooth out for a reason, hopefully. How else are they supposed to take the tooth out?
Well, maybe there doesn't, if you treat it herbally, maybe there's not a need to take the tooth out and you can
100%
treat yourself from the inside with herbs.
Well, okay, I get that. To like preventative methods.
Right. Well, and there are herbs that can alleviate the pain too and reduce infection. Possibly. I'm not an expert, so I can't say, but I'm sure we can get someone on here who is.
Oh, these are my favorite conversations.
I would say the endoscopy is a bit invasive in that they stick like a pipe and a camera down your throat, and then they like in some cases get a sample of your esophagus and then test that and they review that and like, I don't know. I'm not saying I know a better way to get that sample, but I have to imagine that sticking a pipe down people's throat and a camera. I mean, that would come a long way with that anyway. Just like a little snake camera that you got to swallow. But like definitely not a nice experience.
I mean, you'd have to think that maybe someday there'd be some safe X-ray that they could do that could see that from the outside.
Yeah.
I think some people do have some scanning machines. I heard there was a doctor in New York where they can just scan you and see what's wrong with you. So I don't know how much it cost. I don't remember the doctor's name, but so I think there are things like that out there. They're just not accessible to the general public.
That sounds totally legit.
Yeah, that sounds like the
movie.
Scan
you, and I'll tell you what's wrong. I'll tell you everything that's wrong.
I think that's Elysium with Matt Damon.
I'm sure people who have money, like professional athletes, Tom Brady, I'm sure he has access to things where that would be less invasive and, you know, say what's wrong with him internally, where it's not as like an endoscopy.
I don't know. I think you're really describing the plot of that movie, actually. And no, I don't think Tom Brady's got anything that we don't really have.
I would disagree.
Cryogenic chamber. He's big on flexibility. He's got time and trainers to help him, stretch and get in shape to play football at 45 years old. But I mean, I don't think there's any medical treatment that he's got that is not on the market.
Well, maybe we should get him on the show. See what he says.
All right, we'll try.
I guess him and Giselle are on the rocks or something. Is that what I heard?
Well, there's a lot of rumors about his absence from training camp, but nothing confirmed.
I thought she went back to Brazil or something, or Costa Rica.
A lot of tea leaves, but nothing confirmed about the story. Brady himself just said, "I'm 45. Like, I'm an adult, basically. Like, I got shit going on." Like, so it led to a lot of speculation, but no one knows exactly what his absence was related to.
I know whenever I have relationship troubles, I go back and watch reruns of The Facts of Life. That's what helps me through.
That's Miss Garrett.
Yep. Charlotte Ray.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Thanks to our sponsors. And now we're back to the program. Okay, and here's a story out of the UK. It's from ndtv.com. Man places psychic wanted ad with no contact information. Says genuine mediums will know how to get in touch with them.
I put that up.
You did it.
That was me. Yep. Oh, I love shit. This story. I love this story. I love what that guy did. Prove it.
What do you mean, prove it?
Let's see who's a psychic. Let's see who's the real deal. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I think it's great. Great idea. You know, it's not, I don't think it's super weird, you know, which is kind of different what he did.
It's kind of a joke.
No, he's serious.
Well,
or you think he's serious?
He or she or they are serious. Oh yeah. I would do it. If I had the money to do that, I would do it. Sure. I want to see who's really like the real deal.
Well, what's the little green triangle doing on the billboard? Because it's really blank. It says psychic wanted, you know where to apply. And then it's got like a green triangle that seems to be some symbol, or like if you were to do some Googling, you might be able to find that green triangle out there. To me, it kind of seems like a little bit of a publicity stunt.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it's a publicity stunt, and you'll see that green triangle is like the logo to a company. And that'll like play out later on.
I would be disappointed if that was the case.
Yeah. Again, this is one that the headline like grabbed me, and then the more you discuss and consider, yeah, it's probably a marketing tool. Everyone's talking about it. It is funny. Psychic wanted, you know where to apply. I mean, that's funny.
It is.
You know what it is? I just figured out what it is. It's like a ZipRecruiter type ad.
Right, right.
It's for a company like ZipRecruiter.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I hope not. I really don't, because I really think that this was a great idea. If there was nothing to do with publicity like that, because there's so much controversy with psychics, and you know, some people believe them, some don't. It depends on the situation. You know, who can do something like that? Let's see if that's possible. You know, if someone could actually do that, that would be amazing. You know, follow through with that billboard and find the person who put the billboard up, which is, you know, supposedly what they were trying to do. That would be awesome.
I think this might be an Indeed ad. Yeah, I think Indeed has like green triangle jobs.
Well, why would they do, like, what would psychics have to do with Indeed, though? Like, help us predict your next employee or something? Or...
No, because the sign specifically says psychics wanted, you know where to apply.
So it apply. Could be anything. Like... Apply. Okay.
Yeah.
Keyword. Okay.
Disappointing.
If that's the case, I would be. Well, let's just do it for real. What if we put one up and do it for real and see who contacts us? Well, I guess they would know now that it was us. So, never mind. Scratch it.
All right, here's a story out of Scotland. Vincent Van Gogh self-portrait. We found a new one. The world has got a new Van Gogh self-portrait, and it had to be uncovered using an X-ray because this self-portrait was hidden for more than a century behind another one of his paintings.
I can't go off on my art tangent again like I did last episode that I was on. Everybody, Weird Space Part 3, if you want to hear my fine art tangent that I went on.
You're anti-fine art. You are pro-homemade furniture.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's practical.
It isn't. In the meantime, I'll have you know, I looked into this. The value of homemade furniture is decreasing at exponential rates. They are almost valued at nothing because people don't want stuff anymore.
Well, they still people want paintings.
People are turning to minimalism. There's a younger generation that does not want big, bulky furniture. People don't like the idea of being tied down to stuff. And the trend is going in the opposite direction. Your argument for homemade furniture, sir, is dated.
We don't have to use just furniture as an example. The fact still remains that fine art is useless. It has no practical value. You know, we could go, there's other things that are increasing in value besides furniture. Okay, furniture was just one example of something practical.
There's more to the world than just practicality. There's so much that happens that's not practical.
But let's not value it at $1 million, like a painting would.
Let's take athletics just very briefly here, okay?
Totally different than fine art, but okay.
Well, in practicality, how practical is, I don't know, what watching a football game, playing basketball? Is this something that gets you ahead in any way other than like maybe a little exercise or a little escapism?
Well, it depends if you're a fan or if you're a player. So as a player, that's totally different, you know, exercise and having fun and all that. As a fan watching a professional game, you know, you're invested in that team or that player and you can root for them. Something live is happening and changing constantly within that. So it's totally different than a static piece of, you know, paper on your wall that someone just threw a couple colors in there and diddled around with a pencil.
Now, let me ask you something here. Okay, so if you went to a sporting event and it ended up being a classic game for whatever reason, and you save that ticket stub would be worth more money as years go by, much like fine art, because it's a piece of culture. You cannot, that's as close as you can get to holding history in your hands.
Well, yeah, it all goes back to determining what society determines as culture and valuable. See, I don't find those things valuable to me.
So you don't find culture valuable, but you've been talking about 90210 for every time we turn on the Zoom.
Well, not a piece of paper, you know, it's a piece of paper, you know. So maybe I would find some sort of 1,000-year-old ceramics that has a practical value to it. You know, you could put some liquids in there and drink out of it from some, you know, maybe African ethnic group from way back in the day. You know, that would be valuable. Things that don't exist anymore like that. I think that would be pretty neat.
So you used the sports analogy. And Scott, it felt to me like you were applying that same value to like a sporting match. because you could sit there and you could watch the match unfold and there's a winner. Right. So there's a satisfying conclusion.
Right. And it involves people. There's things going on within that. There's so many, it's very dynamic and it's not just a piece of paper on the wall.
Right. But then you say, okay, now I'm looking at a piece of paper on the wall with some colors thrown on it. How is that different if you're with people who are like-minded looking at that and everybody is interpreting it differently and getting a similar feeling from it as maybe people watching a basketball game?
Well, that's fine. Hey, that's great. You know, if that's what you're into, but does it really have to be worth $100,000?
Does attending a Red Sox game for a family of four have to be worth $5,000?
No, I think that's ridiculous too. That's, you know, the cost of things are totally ridiculous. And yeah, people get paid way more than maybe they should too. And many things. Look at Vanna White. Wheel of Fortune. That's ridiculous.
I think Vanna White deserves
Vanna White alone.
Yeah, seriously. She deserves every dime she makes.
All she does is... That's true. No, she deserves that. Yeah, she makes more than some countries' GDPs. She makes more than, but that's okay.
Just yesterday, as we record this, Russell Wilson, he signed a guaranteed contract, $150 million. So what's the difference between the athlete who's playing and entertaining people and the artist who, in some cases, would get paid millions of dollars for their work?
Well, Russell Wilson's risking his life out there, you know, serious injury, whereas what is the painter going to get carpal tunnel a little bit maybe, you know?
No, but you put yourself out there and you're at risk more than if you don't.
The painter or the athlete?
Anyone who puts themselves out there into the universe as an artist, if you write something.
What are they going to get emotionally hurt? They're in their house. They're painting or maybe in their yard painting a bird or something. They're not going to get hurt by that unless there's some.
If you publish it online, you never know what's going to happen. You lose control of the reaction of your artwork.
Okay, so their feelings might get hurt.
No.
Their feelings might get hurt. Russell Wilson might get seriously injured.
Right. Well, what if some unstable person sees your artwork on your website and thinks you're talking to them with your art?
Okay, well, that could happen with anything. That could happen with...
That's the point. You put yourself out there as opposed to staying inside. You're more at risk.
I don't know if this argument's really, you know, working for proving your point. It doesn't...
Yes, Russell Wilson can get hurt because he's playing a violent game. And that's the responsibility that he took on when he signed the contract. And he
right.
understands that. And he's got obligations to sponsors, as does the team and their ticket holders. So there's a value that money is applied to. But do you really think that an artist who is, like you said, in their backyard painting a bird expects to make millions of dollars like Russell Wilson off of that painting? Do you understand how like artists get paid and most of them are broke?
Right. And they should be. It's not valuable. That's not... A lot of them might have trust funds or something anyway. So, you know, they might be broke themselves, but they get, you know, it's very elitist, most of it.
Oh my God.
It's very elitist.
So the artists aren't elitist.
A lot of artists have trust funds and they could sit home and paint all day.
Name one.
Oh, there's plenty out there. Trust me. Do some research. You'll see. Maybe not the ones back in the... Maybe Vincent Van Gogh wasn't. You know, I'll give him that. And he was kind of an interesting fellow, so...
Most artists who are driven to create art, you know, are lacking some business sense, I would say.
Well, yeah, because they don't need it. They get family backing.
No, because you use so much of one part of yourself that you lack in other areas.
Well, I'm very artistic and business. So I could do both.
I would argue that you are not artistic at this moment. And these last two recordings, I would say there's a couple of hours of evidence to show that you do not even understand art at this point.
Have you read the mystery show I wrote, The Great American Bake Off? Because that's a work of art, I will tell you, which we should put on at some point, by the way, topic for a different time. But. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys pronounce it Van Gogh or Van Gogh?
Van Gogh.
Have you heard?
No, no.
I've heard people say Van Gogh.
Yeah, me too.
Sounds elitist.
When we went to DC and we went to the museum, I think that's where I first heard it. Van Gogh.
Yeah, I don't know.
They had museums 100 years ago where they would have Native Americans in the museum as for people to gawk at. That didn't, you know, that was okay back then, but today that wouldn't fly. Just like 100 years from now, maybe people are like, wow, they had paintings? People paid millions of dollars for paintings? That's ridiculous. You know,
I doubt that. That's a terrible, terrible.
Oh no, it makes sense.
Fine art is only going up in value.
Just because society comes to an acceptance of something doesn't mean it's right.
Art is the way everything's ever been communicated.
Well, you know, talking is different than valuing a painting on a wall for $1 million.
Talking is different than communicating.
I'll take a chair any day over a painting. I can go outside and admire the sunset. I don't need to look at a painting of the woods on my wall. But maybe if we keep going to this technological future where there's not going to be a nature outside anymore, then we might need paintings. Then it might be more valuable. Then, you know, history.
I need to get to the bottom of this hatred for fine art.
I will admit, there might be a need for it at some day. So maybe it might be good to preserve it when there's no more woods left anymore or wildlife. We could say, oh, okay, that's what it looked like. So then
I want to write an article about this episode. Scott says fine art has no value. Maybe someday.
Maybe someday.
And I hope that doesn't happen. Hope that doesn't happen. I still want to look outside and look at the birds and squirrels and stuff and not have to just look at a painting about it. But then maybe it'll be valuable at that point.
Some people get moved to tears looking at paintings, Scott.
Well, that's fine. That's great. But you can get moved, you know, looking at the sunshine outside too. That doesn't mean the sun's going to cost $1 million, you know. Like, what? Is this making any sense?
This is an argument that we're never gonna feel conclude. Satisfied. Yeah. No. You know, one thing about this article that I love, though, I have to say, is it's the painting that we know that Van Gogh made, called Head of a Peasant Woman from 1885, that was x-rayed. And then they were able to find this self-portrait, this new, previously unknown self-portrait of Van Gogh through x-ray. What's really cool is that in 1885, when Head of a Peasant Woman was finished, that was before Van Gogh cut his ear off, famously cut his left ear off, which is actually visible in the self-portrait. Is a full sight of Van Gogh's intact left ear.
Do you think that was a publicity stunt, cutting off the ear?
No, I think he was. I think he had some problems. I think he was broke and had some problems.
So, is this leading into our? We could finish up with talking about Dawson's Creek, maybe for a little bit.
Well, I want to address this Van Gogh self-portrait. I think it's fascinating that you can see his ear, because all we've ever seen is, or known of him, is that he's a talented artist, and this incident with the ear is like folklore. And it's really fascinating to see this, even though I know it's just, you know, if you're looking at it, it's kind of tough to decipher, but it does look like he's specifically showing that ear because it's a profile. It looks like he's kind of turning in, so you could almost get the full face. But, you know, it's very the ear and the brim of the hat and even a little bit of the eye and nose, like, but it's the ear that's the most prominent.
Yeah, there's no right ear in the painting.
Right. Correct.
I think it looks more like Wilford Brimley, if you ask me. It
does have a little Wilford Brimley to him. Yeah. I think it's fascinating that he did this, and I think it's clever that all of these generations later we can find these things hidden through technology that he wasn't sure when he did it, it would ever be seen.
Right.
How would this be seen? He did it, got it out of his system, painted over it, cut the ear off.
But the thing is, who cares? Like, what does this matter in my life? This doesn't help me at all. You know, you either should be saving lives, okay, rescuing things, you know, medical field, whatever. This does not do anything.
You know, one question I had when I first read the article was, well, how did they know it was a self-portrait? And then I remember that Van Gogh's got several self-portraits, and then if you look at the x-rayed one, it's pretty clearly him, you know? It's not a mystery, it's just him. Yeah, I guess he did that a lot. He painted over a canvas, which, you know, I had artist friends who would do the same thing. So I think that's a pretty common thing. Recycle a canvas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you think that it was a way for him to, like, get into the routine of painting? You know, he's got the mirror, so he's painting his self-portrait. Okay, now I'm getting warmed up. Now I can start the actual painting I wanted because it's, like, familiar to him and he can just do it. Or do you think there was something more psychologically, like, embedded there?
I just think it was practice, and he probably... It either wasn't to his liking, or he always intended it to just be practice when he painted over it.
Yeah, yeah.
He was probably an egomaniac like most artists, you know? Like, okay. These people, you know, have huge egos. And look, like, see, okay, let me give you an example. You know, what you guys do with Crawl Space is very important. You try to help find missing people out there, you know? You're trying to help families and people search and get the word out there. That's vitally important. Drawing a painting, you know, unless you're doing a sketch artist of, you know, I could see sketch artist of, you know, looking for criminals. That's important. You know, focus your painting skills on that and not on, okay, I'm going to draw a picture of myself, you know, or I'm going to draw a starry, starry night. And it looks like, you know, a 3-year-old could do it. Like, what? You know, do something okay. That's important, that's going to, you know, make people laugh, rescue people, save lives, things of that nature. Building a chair, that's important.
But what about the cast of The Facts of Life? Shouldn't they be putting their energy into something more useful for society?
Well, Facts of Life got me through some tough times back when I was 8.
Oh, Starry Night got me through some tough times.
Oh, come on. No, it didn't. Come on.
You got generations of people through things.
I don't think. You don't look at Starry. You don't have a breakup with your significant other of 10 years and go look at Starry, Starry Night and say, oh, you know, I'm okay now.
That's your random example.
You must not have been to a museum, an art museum. You couldn't have been to an art museum.
You put on 90210. That gets you through life. Okay. That helps you. Not looking at, I think you can't even name painting them, so not into them.
I'm not even going to ask Picasso. Because I know you haven't been to a fine art museum.
Oh, I've been to a museum.
No, you haven't. Because you wouldn't have this take if you have.
I went to the Boston one.
No, you didn't.
I did.
You never
it's a
did.
Bunch of stuff on a wall.
I'm sure you never visited it.
I've been to the MFA in Boston.
You've got no sleeves.
That's true.
Yeah, what is that, like a Aerosmith shirt?
I know. I wish it didn't kind of, it looks like that, but I think it's something else. I don't really know what it is. I just say it's from the movie Over the Top. It has something to do with that.
Another quality contributor to the...
Do we have time? That helps. See, Over the Top. No, that's art. That helped me. For someone who didn't really have like... you know, their father in their life for the first 8 years of their life. Sylvester Stallone was my dad during that.
But
movie.
How can you judge someone else's experience through art, like, and weigh that against your own? How can you say this piece of art is not valuable in the world because I never got value out of it?
Well, let's bring some people on that can say like that it really had a huge effect on their life by just looking at a painting or something. Let's, you know, and it can't say, oh, it inspired me to draw. It inspired me to draw. It can't be anything like that.
There are people in tears right now at art museums looking at art.
They're a little over.
No one is watching Over the Top right now. Nobody.
I would love to get a count on people watching Over the Top right now and people in the museums across the country and world.
Well, I think Over the Top would have more of an effect on people's lives than looking at a painting on a wall and saying, you know, that really helped me through some tough times.
Oh, so yeah, just watch Sylvester Stallone on a box in my living room.
In an arm wrestling movie.
Quintessential father-son movie.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you're minimizing every time you say, oh, in a room, on a wall. Like,
it's
you just
true.
Minimize the impact.
Well,
it's a museum.
If it brings you to tears, fine.
You belong in a museum.
They should devote those spaces to something more useful.
Final story.
Create a homeless shelter out of it.
Our final story brings us to the small northwest Iowa town of Sheldon. This is the best story. Yeah, this one, save the best for last. This one's from wavy.com, W-A-V-Y.com. Iowa town asks, where did we put our time capsule?
The only reason I'm into this story is because it takes place in Iowa, one of my favorite states.
Iowa's a nice state.
I'd rather watch paint dry.
Hey, isn't one of your favorite movies? Wasn't that made in Iowa? Field of Dreams, perhaps? Another life-changing movie. Wasn't a painting. If they made the Field of Dreams painting, I don't think it would have had as much effect as the movie did on people.
Well, it was a book first. Apparently, again, movies and TV shows are the only art that matter to Scott.
And from a certain period in the 80s, maybe bleeding into the early 90s. Well, I love this story because you know that there was a conversation when they were burying this. Was it 50 years ago? And then they were going to dig it up. So they were burying this in 1972. You know there was a conversation like, we got to make sure we remember where it is. Where did they drop the ball? How was there not a marker?
Yeah, great point. Apparently, it's somewhere in a park, and they're planning on having a celebration, 150th anniversary town celebration this weekend. But there's a lot of concrete in this park, apparently. And before they puncture through the concrete, they don't want to waste their time, money, or make a mess of this park if they're wrong about the location. So, yeah, where did the map go that maybe showed where this time capsule was? I mean, was it concreted over unknowing that there was a time capsule somewhere in this park?
I mean, we're not talking a big town either.
And really, what's going to be in the time capsule that's so valuable? A painting, probably. Let's use taxpayer money. Let's use taxpayer money to have meetings about this all week long and use all these funds to dig up the road, find this time capsule. And well, what's going to be a painting or a piece of a 4-inch by 4-inch piece of cloth, piece of paper.
I think typically a chair would be in there.
See, a chair wouldn't fit in there, or else then maybe it might be worth it.
The only part of this article that I was irritated with was when they mentioned that they were going to get a group in to do some ground-penetrating radar to try to find it. And I just was thinking to myself, my God, we talk about human lives, and boy, how hard is it to get a group with ground-penetrating radar to just, you know, come up and do a search? This, they're like dropping everything they're doing to find this time capsule. Probably because if you find a body, there's a whole lot more to be accountable for than a time capsule. So I get like the whole open investigation case thing. But that was the only thing that stood out to me as like slightly irritating. It's just really funny.
What was it? Ground what?
Ground penetrating radar.
Ground what?
Oh my God. You want me to say penetrating?
Just for the audience.
Oh my God, Scott. Do you know how many times the audience has heard Tim and I say ground penetrating radar? Penetrating, penetrating.
Yeah, our audience is not Beavis and Butthead.
I think there's games where people take a shot every time you say ground penetrating. There's drinking games out there.
Okay. Thanks for joining us here today, Scotty.
Every
this
time.
This has been a lot of fun.
Well, I just want to real quick, David Pitt, who wrote this story, Iowa town asks, where did we put our time capsule? David Pitt, I would love to chat with him about this and maybe get somebody else from the town on to talk about this. We need some firsthand accounts here.
We should ask the town because I think the article's from the AP. I don't know if that's like he's like a national guy.
Quick question. Have either of you tried the crab whiskey that we talked about on Weird Space Part 3?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, I emailed the company to find out if people were able to drink it with a shell allergy, like we had been speculating, and no one got back to me.
Oh, good customer service.
I'm a little disappointed, I'm not going to lie. I can't imagine that the distillery has so many inquiries that this one didn't stand out. I said, we did a show, we have a podcast, we had a legitimate question, we thought that the concept of the crabs and the whiskey was super interesting, and we were just wondering, because we were asking it on the show, whether the people with an shellfish allergy would be able to drink it. Would you be able to answer that? Nothing back.
They did retweet the episode, so I think maybe they just don't have an answer for that question.
That's dangerous.
Yeah.
If I had a shellfish allergy, I would err on the side of caution on that and not attempt that. But I was just wondering if you guys tasted it at all and got a bottle just to see, assuming you guys don't have shellfish allergies.
Haven't been up to that part of New Hampshire.
Okay. So yeah. You have to drive there and get the bottle? It's not like in stores yet? Wow. I can see that business flourishing.
With your business sense.
My artistic and business acumen. Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun, Scotty. Thanks a lot for joining us, helping us unpack these weird stories from the week of September 1st.
I'm hoping people out there that listen to this could really deluge you guys with emails saying how they feel about fine art. And let's just see what the audience says on this one.
Oh, Scott, we have done dozens of episodes of Empty Frames, and we know how they feel about fine art.
Well, I'm going to do my own podcast, and it's going to be called Empty Seat Cushions, and we'll see who gets more listeners.
I will be the first subscriber if you empty produce
seats.
Your own podcast.
Empty seats. Stay tuned, everyone.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We'll be back soon.